Mark Meadows. H.R. Haldeman would like a word. Mark Meadows. H.R. Haldeman. Zombie H.R. Haldeman would like a word.
It's showtime.
It most assuredly is. It is the 14th day of December 2021. This is the hornheadon.live is where you will find us on the interweb tubes. It's also where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia extravaganza, madcap experience that it is. That is the Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, all time zones in the middle, and the great globe around. And if you are listening live right now, and I certainly hope you are, then pop on by the chat room, and if you do so, you will be immediately greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Dowhead and Otto DeShot and Ralps and Squeaky and Stockton Larry and capably moderated. Well, no, you will not be capably moderated by. Because I am an incapable. I am an incapable moderator. Yes, but I'm there at least. So, come on by. Good conversation will be had, I'm sure, during the course of the program this evening. Don't know how long it'll last. That's just one of those things that comes with the healing process. But I'm gonna be here as long as I can make it. Just as I said yesterday evening after I knocked off, I fired up C-SPAN and I watched the brief remarks of the January 6th Commission in voting to send a contempt of Congress recommendation to the full House for Mark Meadows. And, you know, there were no fireworks, but yeah, there were fireworks. It turns out that there were a lot of people doing a lot of things that day, but we'll get to that in a minute. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So we send out thanks this evening. And by we, I don't mean me and that mouse in my pocket. I mean the entire community appreciates those. You know, those who support appreciate the others who support. And the people who are unable to support, well, they appreciate it all too, because there's nothing for sale here. Everything's free. This has never been a gate-kept program ever from the very beginning. And so thanks go out for this 14th day of the month to our, curiously enough, 14th day of the month subscribers. And that means thanks. Thanks so very kindly to Ralps. And thank you so kindly to Matt in San Francisco. And thanks to David in San Diego. Thank you all so kindly for being partial sponsors of the program. Where does that leave us? Well, the fundraising goal for this evening is, it stands at $1,490. $1,490. And, there's a little bit of good news because we have a chance to, take that down. Rather a bit. I had a lovely note from our pal Rico in DeBerg. Rico wrote earlier today, subject line, the continuing Fuck Joe Manchin challenge. My goodness. Yeah, I understand, Rico. Hey, gorgeous all. I am so goddamn sick of this pompous ass I could spit. Seriously, the only inflation that worries me long term is his inflated sense of entitlement and self-worth. Good Lord, I can't wait till I never have to hear his name and see his smug, preachy face again. Have I made myself clear? Okay, so in a more constructive vein, I'm proposing a $100 challenge, and when it's met, I'll kick in another $100. Glad to hear your recovery's going well, and can't wait till you're in the same time zone as me again. You know, for the longest time, I was a big fan of Central Time, but I think somewhere along the way, I kind of got used to Eastern Time, and doggone it, I'm kind of there with you. Love you long time, my sister, says Rico. Thank you, Rico. Love you long time right back. Rico in the shimmering and thankfully tornado-free Berg. But having written that, Rico thought further. And this is, you know, this is one of those things that makes me so grateful for the for the common decency and the shared humanity of this, our little community, there's a degree of compassion that maybe one wouldn't find in other places. I don't know. But Rico followed up and said, I didn't mean to be flip saying, thankfully, tornado Freeburg. I watched MSNBC yesterday, and the devastation in Kentucky was horrific. My God, if those towns had been carpet-bombed, I can't imagine it would have been any worse. And what makes it even more heartbreaking is that the people who were killed and had their homes destroyed were poor and struggling just to make a life for themselves and their children. These are people that Mitch and Randy pander to for votes, but in reality couldn't give a shit less about. It makes me heartsick. Colbert's website has a list of worthy agencies to contribute to, and I did what I could. I consider these people my brothers and sisters and can only hope they get the help they need to rebuild their lives. I just had to say that, and again, I apologize for being inconsiderate. You were not inconsiderate, Rico. You were not inconsiderate in the least. In point of fact, what this boils down to is you are considerate in the extreme. And you express it so very, very well. I don't know how they rebuild. I mean, in the course of growing up down here, I saw a number of towns that were absolutely leveled by tornadoes. In fact, it's kind of weird when I'm traveling between West Virginia and the town where I grew up. Most of the time I take US 43 up out of the shoals and through Lawrence County, Lawrenceburg, and up beyond there. And a tornado just ripped hell through there a lot of years back. And, you know, you can still see some of the scars. And the power and the devastation leaves you flabbergasted. So, thank you for your compassion. I think it speaks well of our community, Rico. And I appreciate it, and I know everyone else does as well. And it's that part about how these are people that Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, pander to for votes, but couldn't give less of a shit about. They sincerely don't. And it's disgusting, really. As we noted on the program, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, hastily penned a long letter to Joe Biden telling that, oh, now is the time for the federal government to respond and crank up the printing presses and send some money to my constituents. You know, because Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, is a shameless little punk. And he will, of course, when the federal government, as led by President Biden, starts sending the money, which will be quickly, Rand Paul will be right there to take credit for it. Even though Rand Paul despises this kind of government help, if it's going to anybody except people that can vote for, well, you know how this game is played, Rand Paul. And so, it's a right revolting situation, but I hope, hope is such a, it's such a brutal thing. There's a line in, I forget if it's season one or season two of Ted Lasso, where they say, it's the hope that kills you. And I get their meaning there. So it is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. It's a day for taking note of manifestations of titanic intellect, usually of the right-wing variety, where matters political and civic are concerned. And we certainly have those. You might recall that Titanic Tuesday takes its origins many, many years ago in the dim mists of time when the morning monotone in Beckley, West Virginia, no longer with us, would read the newspaper to his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking followers, and God only knows how many automobiles he sent careening into telephone poles as their drivers simply fell asleep listening to that sonorous baritone bass monotone But he took a call one day where one of the aforementioned mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing morons asked, Steve, how come it is that there are seashells in the rocks of West Virginia? I seen them when I was down in the mines, and I knows we ain't nowhere near the beach. To which Steve responded, well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates. Mm-hmm. The movement of the Titanic plates. Yeah, no word on the movement of the Titanic pizza slicer, but, well, that's something for science to sort out later. And that's where we get the idea of Titanic intellect and, you know, people standing on the bridge and yelling, full speed ahead at that at that iceberg. We'll shatter that thing into a million tiny ice cubes and we'll have cocktails by midnight. Yeah, right. And Titanic intellect we do have, indeed, this evening. Thank you very kindly. Ralph's just jumped in regard to Rico's challenge and said, I got $10 for the challenge if somebody else has $10. So there's a way to knock out $20 of the 100 we need to raise to try. And see, that's cool, because if we meet Rico's challenge, then that will take down a full day of broadcasting from last week. And that would be magnificent. Let's see. Yeah, because last week remains $890 unfunded. Yeah, and so that would take us down to $590 unfunded from last week, which would mean we had Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday funded, and Thursday and Friday yet to do, and then yesterday and today. So hopefully people will, the community will come together and jump in. I had the same reaction, Steve in New York says, to what I was talking about earlier. Maybe it's my wishful thinking, but the January 6th committee feels like today was a turning point where bombshells are going to start coming every day. It just feels different today. I hope so. There was something decidedly dramatic about Dick in a Wig, Liz Cheney. She got to read some of the juiciest emails of people begging Nitwit Nero to go live on TV and call off his attack dogs that he had turned loose to try to overturn constitutional governance in the United States of America. My particular favorite was just one of the apparently several emails that Trader Tot, Don Jr., sent to Mark Meadows, because Mark Meadows, I mean, get this. Now, we're talking about Don Jr. here. The number one son. Not the favorite child, because, of course, that was Precious Princess I Wank Him a Daddy Trump. But Don Jr., who has direct contact information for his pappy, okay? He didn't have to go through Mark Meadows. But apparently he was swinging a miss on trying to explain to his addled and demented and evil father that running a coup is not the best way to stay president of the United States. And so there was Trader Tot begging Mark Meadows repeatedly, we need an address from the Oval Office. He has to tell these people to go home. And I guess I just have this emotional need to think that Nitwit Nero was watching last night, wherever he is, whether he's at Mar-a-Lardass or Bedmonster, Bedmushroom, more like, probably. But I just emotionally need to think that he was watching it and just mumbling to himself, all right, the little fucker's out of the will. That's it. I'm crossing him out right now. Somebody get me my will. Don Jr. is out of the will. He's definitely out of the will. How dare he throw me under the bus? He knew what I was doing.
And so there was no small amount of schadenfreude involved with that transaction.
But there were more. And in particular, the naming of names at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, in which, and you know, we'd speculated last night who it was. I forgot, somebody said Tucker Carlson. I said, no, I don't think it can be Tucker Carlson. I posited Hannity. Hannity was one of them. He needs to tell people to go home. But the one we left out, and I don't know why we did, but Frau Ingram wrote to Mark Meadows saying, you tell him to make him go away. He's ruining his presidency. Or maybe that was Brian Kilmeade, broadcast partner of Steve Ducey, and whoever the attack blonde of the moment is on Fox and Fiends in the mornings. But they have a nice chatty relationship with Nitwit Nero, and so Brian Kilmeade, Frau Ingram, and Sean Hannity Job, the life support system for a haircut, all were apparently entirely aware that this thing was brought on by Trump, led by Trump, driven by Trump, and they were trying to get him to see reason and call off the attack. Didn't work real good, did it? Nope. I think the official number was something like 186 minutes, 3 hours and 6 minutes that Nitwit Nero fiddled while the Capitol came damn close to burning. And then, of course, the other aspect of this, lies in the fact that names were not named, but we were told that numerous members of the Congress were furiously, my God, if he had his notification dinger on his phone, that thing must have been going off like a hotel desk bell. Ding, 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 ding. Yep. With various and sundry Republicans writing to say, hey, call this shit out. Call it off. This has to end. This is intolerable. They're trying to kill us. You know, one of the text messages referencing the fact there is a pitched battle outside the door of the House. And I guess, I don't know, maybe Schadenfreude is all that we get out of this. I hope not. But today, the January 6th Commission Chairman, Benny Thompson of Mississippi, said, oh no, and there must have been some pants filling at this remark. There are members of the House and Senate who are absolutely shitting themselves, because they were up to their eyebrows in this insurrectionist plot. And while names were not named last night, I guess out of perhaps some, to the extent that they were texting from inside the Capitol at a time when the Congress was in session, I don't know the answer to this, I'm merely speculating, that there was some degree of privilege that attached to the communications, but that privilege is probably not going to last, because again, Benny Thompson said today, oh no, their names are going to become public. And I'm eagerly awaiting a special handful of names. Maybe, well, I don't know, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America? Or Josh Wet Behind the Ears Hawley? Maybe Senator Foghorn Leghorn of Louisiana, John Kennedy. Mike Lee, constitutional scholar from Utah. Or my particular favorite, Tommy the Tuber, Mr. Potato Head, the junior senator from Alabama, who was barely a senator at all by then, but was actually on the phone with Nitwit Nero. So we on to attack. This is worse than Alabama and Auburn. This is crazy. Writing Junior out of the will, Lee in New York says, I can hear Oval Orange shouting, where's my Sharpie? I need my Sharpie. Can't you just? And isn't it a delightful thought? And on that day, somewhere in the future, at the reading of the will,
and I leave my son, Donald Trump Jr., nothing, not a sausage, nothing. Because I know what he did on January the 6th. He threw me under the bus.
I know, it's too much to hope for, isn't it? Still kind of irresistible, though. It really, really is. But that's a wait-and-see kind of thing. Or Jim Banks, who spoke this afternoon. Yeah, that's a possibility. Dear Robin, says Stephen New York, this is all clearly fake news. Given what we all know that the rioters were Antifa and BLM, these texts are clearly fake because Orange Jesus would have no sway over these ultra-leftist thugs. Yeah, maybe I would not be at all surprised if they start trotting that out at some point in time. Yeah. But this being Titanic Tuesday, and we'll probably get back to the January 6th issue at some point in the program. Program note. This is another one of those little milestone days. I keep track of these things just because it's so absolutely mind-boggling to me. This is 5 weeks to the day since I was able to become my authentic self. 5 weeks to the day. And tomorrow, I have an appointment with my surgeon. And it may be the last appointment. I kind of hope it is. Not that I don't like him or anything. But I kind of hope it's my last appointment with him for a while. Because he may clear me to travel. And that means home before New Year's. And that means so very much. So that appointment is a possible interruption of the program tomorrow. I hope it isn't, but it may be. And then this, again, in terms of program announcements, please make a note of it. A week from today, we will be clearing out of this lovely little apartment that we have occupied for 5 weeks, and begin the slow process of heading home. I always think of Kenneth Branagh in Henry V, when he gets all misty-eyed and wistful. I forget, is it at the St. Crispin's Day speech? He says, for England and home. Yeah, that became kind of a thing between Ferg and me. And, when we were out together at the store or whatever, I'd look at him and say, well, let's go, son. And he said, to England. And I respond with, and home. Yeah. So a week from today, we will be headed up to Florence, where I will spend some time with friends. I'll try to get some broadcasts in there. We'll spend a few days. We probably won't leave until after Christmas. Just because I don't want to be on the road in Christmas holiday traffic in any kind of a... I mean, I'm going to be compromised whenever we leave, but I don't feel like fighting pre-holiday traffic. Maybe post-holiday traffic will be a little bit better. But if we leave Florence on the 27th, 27th is a Monday, and might make for easier traveling. So we'll be in Florence the 21st, 22nd, 23rd, 24th, 25th, Christmas Eve and Christmas, 26th and 27th. And, like I said, I'll try to get some broadcasts in during that time period. But there will be, obviously, no program on December the 21st. And we'll see how it plays out from there. So I just wanted to make sure. You know, sometimes people miss the program notes because I put it to the end of the program or at the very beginning of the program. And in the world of podcasts, people speed up the, and God knows you can speed this program up and probably cut it by at least a third because I don't talk real fast. And there are pauses you could drive trucks through. But people may miss out on the, miss the program announcement. So anyway, put a big X on December the 21st, a week from today, as there will be no program. And tomorrow is a question mark, but hopefully not a profound question mark. We'll just see how it all plays out because sometimes it's a little bit rough with these doctor's appointments. Last one is a real bear. Ugh, catheters. Yuck. Whew. I hurt just thinking about it. But anyway, this being Titanic Tuesday, I just happened to run across a piece of alleged journalism that made me bark like a hoot owl. It comes from CNN, and it's a classic example of what I kind of call gossip girl journalism, and that's not a misogynist slam. No, it's just it's just so seventh grade. And it comes from, of course, one of the nation's leading purveyors of gossip journalism. And I'm talking, of course, about Chris Cillizza at CNN. Anytime I see his name on the byline, I know I'm guaranteed to read something that's going to make me cringe. And in this case, it has to do with a woman who's running against Lisa Murkowski in the primary in Alaska. Now, there's no sure thing that she's going to unseat Lisa Murkowski. And in point of fact, Lisa Murkowski has been beaten in primaries in Alaska in the past and turned around and ran in the general as an independent and held on to her seat. This is the wrong place to come if you're looking for the Lisa Murkowski fan club, because it is not here. She, as opposed to noted Maine moderate Susan Collins, does occasionally get a vote right once in a while. She's in the blind hogs club of Republicans. Every now and then she stumbles across an acorn, but. So there's a There's a maggot named Kelly Chewbacca, T-S-H-I-B-A-K-A. I'm probably mispronouncing it. I apologize. But Kelly Chewbacca is a maggot, and she has been endorsed by Nitwit Nero. And this entire stupid column is about something that she said on the campaign trail that has no particular moment whatsoever and is nothing more than gossip. But Chris Cillizza has to crank out some craptastic journalism or else they stop giving him those great big CNN money checks. And so Kelly Chewbacca, whom I would hazard a guess that the vast majority of us have never even heard of, caught the eye of eager reporter Chris Cillizza, who quoted her as having made a, and these are his words, provocative announcement. Really? A provocative announcement? Well, we'll go through the quote and we'll see if A, it's provocative, or B, if it's even an announcement. Quote, Mitch McConnell has repeatedly bailed out Joe Biden, giving him gifts of Senate votes, which are the only things keeping the Biden administration on life support. I don't know about you, but I kind of want to run outside and eat dirt and run rabbits. And the parking lot's paved out there, so the eating dirt part's going to be kind of tough. And there's a lot of cats around here, perhaps feral or otherwise. And I imagine the rabbit population isn't that good, but that wouldn't necessarily slow me down. The Biden administration on life support. Is it just me? Or is unemployment at a low? Is it just me, or did the Biden administration make sure that people didn't freaking starve to death? Is it just me, or is the Biden administration doing everything in its power to get the pandemic under control? Is it just me, or did the Biden administration make sure that there was additional money to help parents of children during the pandemic? Is that all just me, or did that actually happen? Is that a thing that happened? Because I feel pretty confident that that's a thing that happened. But according to Kelly Shibaka, who is apparently a maggot in the extreme, the Biden administration is on life support. You know they can't resist using phrases like on life support, because that points to President Biden's great and advanced age as compared to that young and sprightly Donald Trump. Oh, help me. When I defeat Murkowski, oh, doesn't she just sound like something? When I defeat Murkowski and become Alaska's next U.S. Senator, I will not support Mitch McConnell as leader. It's time for new America First leadership in the Senate. God, what do you think of every time you see that phrase, America First? I think of Charles Lindbergh. I think of somebody who was a Nazi cuddler. I think of what America First actually means in the context of American history, don't you? America First leadership. It's time for new America First leadership in the Senate. And who would that be, Kelly Shibaka? Would that be the traitor Josh Hawley? Or maybe you'd like to have Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, who is such a man of power and courage and conviction that he let nitwit Nero call his wife ugly and suggest that his own pappy had a hand in the killing of JFK. Ooh, maybe it could be Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head. Who, by the way, is up for re-election, you know, the people have met. Maybe that explains why he was so lickety-split getting that letter out to the Bidens. Oh, you need to send us some money here to Kentucky because I got a re-election to run. Yeah, I'm sure Rand just wants to wet his beak. Mm-hmm. He'll probably hand out the great big money checks personally if he can stand to get that close to the hoi polloi. I will not support. Now, so Mitch McConnell has been giving gifts to Joe Biden. Did I miss something? Because I feel like I missed something. Because I'm pretty sure that there hasn't been a lot of gift giving from Mitch McConnell. I'm pretty sure that Mitch McConnell, with the aid and comfort of people like Joe Manchin. By the way, did I mention that there's a continuing fuck Joe Manchin challenge on the table this evening? Ralph's is ready with $10 to kick in if somebody else will kick in $10. And then we'll only have $80 to go and we'll actually get Wednesday covered and $10 of Thursday for last week. That would be profound and wonderful. Thank you, Rico. This is just a horrible piece of attempted journalism. A provocative announcement. And Saliza, having already said that it's a provocative announcement, it's a major award. It's fragile. 'Tis the season, you know. But Saliza, writing in a sentence fragment that would not pass my ninth grade journalism teacher, said, which is in and of itself is not terribly surprising, period. Now, Chris Saliza has been getting those CNN big money checks for a while. They put him on TV and stuff sometimes. There is apparently an opening. Well, no, there's no opening. There's just no editors. There's nobody actually copy editing at CNN anymore. Apparently, they might have an office space that used to have a copy editor in it, but there's probably like 4 inches of dust on the desk, and maybe the last copy editor is there with his little green eye shade visor over his now skinless skull, and the last tendrils of his half torn out hair dangling from it, and his bony fingers hanging on to a blue pencil in death. I mean, jot this down. You got a pen and paper? I mean, because we practice the art of word knowing a lot around here. Capital W, which, that is the beginning of the sentence, which is, comma, in and of itself, comma, is not terribly surprising, period. Holy crap! That's astonishingly horrible. And it made it all the way to the CNN website and has gone all around the world, and people are reading it. And it amazes me that there are people who think that Chris Cillizza is some sort of cogent political analyst. So he says first he says it's a provocative announcement, and then he says it's not terribly surprising. Which is it, Chrissy? Pick one. Preferably not in the form of a fucking sentence fragment. After all, McConnell is supporting Murkowski in her re-election bid, which gives Shabaka plenty of reason to position herself against the Senate minority leader. Does it really, Chris? I mean, she's wanting to enter the Senate as a Republican because MAGOT. And he has the power, McConnell does, to swat her like a gnat. No, Ralphs, no. Ralphs said, and here I thought you meant Kelly Chewbacca. Oh, I can't wait to get home to my cowbell. If she's announcing that she's going to war with Mitch McConnell, the current most powerful Republican in the country, I think it shows not so much reason to position herself against him as not having the clearest ability of cogent thought. Because here's another secret. I mentioned the fact that Lisa Murkowski has won as an independent in the past. Even if she loses the Republican primary, Mitch McConnell's not going to run out and, well, the people of Alaska have spoken, and the caribou, and the elks, and a few wolves here and there, because there's a hell of a lot more wildlife in Alaska than there are human beings, and that's why the Senate's as undemocratic as it is. But I guess I got no choice now but to support Kelly Shabaka. Oh, yeah. So this is an entire column by a moron, by a titanic intellect, about a titanic intellect. And then he asks, and I don't know, is this just the curse of having to crank out columns day after 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 day? That you'll just grasp at anything just to fill your quota of words in a row in order to keep getting your great big CNN money check. Is that what it is? I mean, I hate to reduce everything to crass capitalism, but this certainly feels like it's quacking like a duck and walking like a duck and, well, a duck. A duck. So having asked if it's whether she's starting a trend, he then decides to put out the idea. And this is so that the Beltway media will look at it and say, well, you know, Crystal. And then they start doing that thing where one member of the media will write about something that another member of the media wrote about. And somebody else in the Beltway media will write about what the two people said. And the next thing you know, it's a fucking story that's not a story. It's just a seventh grade game of telephone. Remember that former President Donald Trump has endorsed Shabaka. And Trump has been hugely critical of McConnell. saying,
he has all the cards to win, but not the guts to play them. Instead, he gives our country away, just like he did with the two Senate seats in Georgia and the presidency itself. The old crow is a disaster.
Really? No, no. That's right. Nitwit Nero referred to Mitch McConnell, the most powerful Republican presently in the government, as the old crow. The old crow. Old crow, by the way, is a brand of bourbon out of Kentucky. I can't credit Nitwit Nero with that much. No. And then having put forth his unified field theory of maggotry, our genius, Chris Cillizza, then says, combine those factors and you get at least the possibility. With the exception of nerd girls like me who reads this crap for entertainment, who's paying attention? At least the possibility that saying you won't vote for McConnell as leader if you win is a must-do for Senate GOP candidates trying to win Trump's endorsement. The only example of this is a probably dark horse primary candidate in Alaska, where the population is not great. I don't mean as in awesomeness. I mean in terms of that many people. And I'm trying for the life of me to figure out how one example maketh a trend. I mean, even Arlo Guthrie said, you know, you got to have at least two or three before you get a movement. And then showing that he, Chris Cillizza, is, and this was what originally made me take note, I read the stupidity, and then I got down to this one line, and I was like, oh, fuck me dead. Again with the sentence fragments, which, and this is the whole sentence, which is not an insignificant thing, exclamation point, like, comma, at all. Exclamation point. There's a reason I said that this is Gossip Girl journalism. Which is not an insignificant thing, like, at all. And this is what is supposed to inform our political discourse. What this is embarrassing. It's embarrassing even to the memories of the worst political hacks of the days of broadsheet bullshit journalism. You know, you supply the pictures, I'll supply the war. You know, that kind of crap. Or who was it? Drew Pearson writing about the awfulness, apparently, of Margaret Truman's singing and or piano playing. God. And then he goes on to say that there's a war of trying to out-maggot each other in Ohio between people like Josh Mandel and J.D. Vance. He quotes, and see, this is, as CNN's Eva McKend put it recently, reporters are not supposed to be quoted in no. Ohio's crowded Republican Senate primary has become a battle over who most can align themselves with former President Donald Trump. Well, shit, honey. That's any Republican primary in the United States. There are no states where Republicans are not trying to prove the greater degree of loyalty that they hold to Nitwit Nero. What cave dweller who has not been out in the sunlight for at least 8 years reads this stuff and says, well, you know, this sure is some sharp shit. Who? The Republican Party is the Trump Party. Now, you know, maybe Liz Cheney wins in Wyoming. But for the most part, being never Trump and anti-Trump within the GOP is political suicide, because they have become a death cult. It's not a political party anymore. It's just a death cult. It's a cult of personality. It's a cult of the worship of the dear leader. I mean, what was it this weekend in some sort of semi-closed-door meeting? He was blathering along with Bill Falafel Boy O'Reilly. God, how quickly we forget.
Yeah, baby, if you were here in my room, I'd take you in the shower and give you a glass of wine, and I'd rub you down with some falafel.
That noted political sage. Well, he was asking him questions, and he said, about dealing with world leaders, and Nitwit Nero replied that,
well, you know who I did best with? The tyrants, the despots. I did best with them. Kim Jong-un sent me love letters. They said he sent me love letters, and they really were love letters.
What the fuck? Huh? I mean, what does that mean? They really were love letters? I mean, is this the kind of thing that begins with dear penthouse, I never thought this would happen to me, but I met a little guy in South Korea and we really hit it off? I mean, after January 6th, is there any doubt about what the Republican Party is? I know we engage in that parlor game of our own, or you know, they certainly do in the for-profit media. Where, well, do you think Donald? Well, Bill, do you think Donald Trump will run? Yeah. Hey, remember, it is possible to run for president of the United States from fucking jail. Eugene V. Debs. And if you want a more modern example, how about the 2012 presidential primary in West Virginia, where Barack Obama was challenged by a guy running from prison in Texas? Whoa. But somewhere out there, I suppose, the people who breathe the really, really thin, high-dollar oxygen think that there's a Republican, there's some sort of fantasy Republican Party that doesn't exist, that is somehow going to come and say, it like, you know, I don't know, some sort of once-in-future King Arthur coming out of the cave kind of. And how can they be that simple? He's already said he's running in everything but in everything but a formal announcement. Nitwit Nero will gauge and his political Renfields will gauge when his announcement can do the most benefit to other maggot candidates. That means he may announce before the 2022 campaign, or he may announce after. Or it may depend on how much cash he can rake in. That's the other side of the coin. That's the only two sides. When will he run? When will he announce? Or will he just keep the grift going? After that, the only question is who else is out there that thinks that they can leverage the Nitwit Nero crowd, the maggots, and make themselves heirs apparent, whether anointed or not. Which kind of makes those emails that Trader Tot, or those texts that Trader Tot sent, a little more important than they might otherwise be. Hmm? Ay, ay, ay. Because you have to know that Trader Tot, somewhere down the road, thinks he's going to be president of the new 90 states of America, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth now, today, and forever in the universe under God. Amen. Now, what's that, Lee, in New York? Stop it, Ron. McConnell would support the caribou and bears and even the ice voting in Alaska before letting Democrats vote. Oh, there's truth in that, Lee. So much truth. So that just, Chris Saliza just sort of got all over me like, I don't know, like poison ivy. And felt like it needed to be mentioned. Because whatever that is, it ain't journalism. This, on the other hand, is. And it comes from Rolling Stone. Hunter Walker reporting. A couple of the organizers, Dustin Stockton and Jennifer Lawrence, not the Academy Award-winning actor, Jennifer Lawrence, have come forward to the January 6th committee. They are completely disenchanted with Nitwit Nero. And they are expected to, if they haven't already, turn over all kinds of text messages, Instagram direct messages, and other documents related to the planning of the January 6th rally. The Stop the Steal rally, that one, remember? And so, as a consequence, you got to wonder how much tea there will be to be spilled coming from those revelations. And it just kind of but we've watched it piling up for years now. And we keep waiting for something resembling consequences. Let's go down to Rona Monkey Up Death Sentences, Florida Stan, where three members of the GOP, three Florida voters, and remember, based on the previous discussion, when we say Republican voters, we mean maggots. Yesterday, an outlet called Click Orlando noted there are three separate reported cases at the retirement community, and Jesus, it's huge. You might recall there was actual conflict among some of the residents there. People who supported Nitwit Nero and people who didn't, and the people who supported Nitwit Nero were trying to terrorize the people who didn't. But there, in three separate instances, there are maggots in the villages who are accused of what? Yes, voter fraud. Jay Ketzik, Joan Halstead, and John Ryder. John Ryder is 61, Joan Halstead is 71, and Jay Ketzik is 63. Ketzik allegedly voted by mail in Florida in October 2020 and cast an absentee ballot in his original home state of Michigan. And Joan Halstead voted in person in Florida, but she cast an absentee ballot in New York State. And then Ryder, he got picked up by the Brevard County deputies at the Royal Caribbean cruise ship terminal at Port Canaveral on December 3rd. And I don't know if he was coming or going. he cast, according to the prosecution, he cast ballots both out of state and in Florida. And all three were, of course, registered Republicans. And at least one of them, Joan Halstead, was an avid maggot on social media. And the day before Joe Biden's inauguration, she shared an image, Trump Keep America Great flag, and captioned it, "You don't have the balls to share because you're afraid to offend your snowflake friends." Mm-hmm. But oddly enough, with all the complaints about voter fraud, most of the people being busted for it, as rare as it is, what are they? Yes, as a matter of fact, they are Republicans. Among other cases, there was a guy in Florida who said that his dead wife's ballot was cast illegally. Law enforcement officials there eventually charged him with having done it himself. Then there was the maggot in Pennsylvania who got popped when he tried to cast his dead mother's ballot. Which makes even more humorous the bumper sticker I saw in town a week or so ago. "Dear God, when I die, please don't let me vote Democrat." Doesn't look like that's going to be a problem. Mm-mm. It's all projection. We've been down this road. Everything Trump or any of his minions complain about is either something they have done or plan to do. Not that, not that much of a challenge, is it? The psychology of these people, doesn't require a lot of work. And then over at the Bulwark, a reporter by the name of Mona Charon has reported that threats and violence are being aimed at school boards, we know this, supervising elections, holding public office, opening a mobile vaccine clinic, or, as she writes, having the effrontery to be elected as Secretary of State. It's a mashup of pandemic-induced mania, social media misinformation, Trump-incited disinhibition, and something in the water. Because they're running around now, even after those murderous assholes in Georgia got busted for trying to execute a citizen's arrest by way of murder of Ahmaud Arbery, they're threatening citizens' arrests all over the country. And of course, they're doing so while, you know, in many instances, carrying guns. And this is the maggot mob that they hope will stop any further legitimate elections. Mona Charon writing said, "The invocation of the citizens' arrest was an excuse for political violence is new. Trump set this table with his locker-up chants in 2016, his accusations of treason against New York Times guest editorialists, the FBI, and anyone else who damaged his fragile psyche. His 2019 Twitter tantrum at Representative Adam Schiff was the gold standard." It's not enough to see these people as revolutionaries or criminals or dupes. Some may be all of these things, but there's a substrate of perverted patriotism here. I think perverted patriotism. I think maybe the word Ms. Charon is looking for is fascism. "The frequent invocation of the citizens' arrest signifies a wish for legitimacy. They yearn to be responsible citizens, upholding the law and the Constitution and the duties of the individual. They've been corrupted, but that's all the more reason for the rest of the American people to assert their uncorrupted patriotism more boldly. In other words, it's getting uglier and uglier and uglier. And will continue until it becomes costly enough, either in terms of jail time or monetary fines, to make people think twice before they do this wicked fascist shit. Around the country, some of these vigilante assholes have taken to going door to door, trying to find evidence of election fraud. One particular group is doing so in New Hampshire. They should probably be canvassing perhaps in the villages in Florida, but then again, they'd find the wrong kind of voter fraud, wouldn't they? Yeah, BuzzFeed with the story of the New Hampshire Voter Integrity Group. And these assholes are showing up at people's homes unbidden and unannounced. And God bless them, the homeowners are calling the cops. But it's not just New Hampshire. It's going on in Arizona. It's going on in Colorado, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, in Florida, in North Carolina, Utah, Nebraska. Because these fools, the same people who think that the Venn diagram is probably something like this, the same sorts of people who think that the vaccine will make you magnetic, and that one of these days QAnon's gonna just open the floodgates and we're gonna find out about all the children that, I don't know, that Tom Hanks has eaten. Hey, the story by Sarah Mims notes a homeowner described being visited by someone from the Integrity Group who said his name was Dean. The homeowner knew right away something was up. He didn't go to answer the door, but spoke to the man through his Ring camera, pressing him on what exactly the New Hampshire Voter Integrity Group was and who they represented. "We took a look at the election, so we're a little concerned about what happened, so we're checking." Yeah. Ms. Mims says the homeowner, a Democrat, tells him to go to hell and get off his property. "You may go to hell and get off my property." And Dean says, "It'll be a nice trip, thank you. I'll see you there." Wrong accent, I know, but still. And it was going on couple of months back, other people knocking on doors. And the scary part about all this is that somehow or another they had gotten information on voters. They'd gotten their names, the addresses. A couple of different people called the cops. Up in New Hampshire, Rye Town Clerk Donna Dakotas said she got inundated with calls. Lord, 2022 is going to be... Whew. And the key to all of this is going to be how thoroughly, how diligently, and how relentlessly this January 6th commission pursues its charge. And by the way, Brother Deacon Asa says, it's either something they have done or are preparing to do. Too wordy, Robin. Let me quote the prophet who originally came up with that saying, every time a pig fucker complains about something, it's an admission. I think I know who that prophet was. And as to the integrity group, yes, yes, also the pack of imbeciles about whom the book A Libertarian Walks Into a Bear was written. Oh, thanks, Brother Deacon. So, hey, that's an hour and 5 minutes of the Fiddler Robster. We still have a $200 challenge on the table, courtesy. Actually, it's a $100 challenge. It's a triple your money challenge, courtesy of Rico in DeBerg. And no responses to it. Which means that, you know, we've got a chance to not see it see the fundraising goal go up by another $300. If we can, we can keep it from getting worse, is what I'm getting at. But we could get down to $1,190 if the challenge is met. Ralph's is waiting for somebody to kick in $10, so she can kick in $10 to go with it and get us down to $80. That would be ever so helpful. I'm just checking here to make sure that I didn't, that for some reason or another PayPal isn't being funny with the notifications. You know, funny. Nope. Just kind of goose egging. So, this is, of course, Conversation Radio, and if you would like to engage in some conversation, I heartily encourage you to jump right in. It's easy to do. Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype, of course. And then the stress line, easily accessed and toll-free, is 844-843-4676. 844-THE-HORN. Todd pointing out the marmalade moron could use his campaign finance proceeds to endow. Remember when the marmalade Mugabe? Yeah. Could use his campaign finance proceeds to endow a legitimate candidate and he would become Speaker of the House. See, that one's out there too. I mean, I never forget that the Speaker of the House need not be actually a member of the House. And I would not be at all surprised if that was somewhere in one of these maggot enablers' minds. Because don't you think that Nitwit Nero would dearly love to fuck over Kevin McCarthy? And if he can get enough maggot Republicans elected, that they might do just that? Yeah. Okay. Jeremy in Vermont, subject line, sitting. Sitting through Castaway and listening to the talk between his character and a soccer ball for damn near 3 hours is crime enough before you add in The Eating of Children by Tom Hanks. Yeah, well, and a couple of others, too. Right. So let's see if we're going to get some conversation going. Let's see if we can get off the schneid fundraising-wise. Take a brief break. Because it is Tuesday, and that means we have the Green News Report, which I always look forward to and all too often forget about. And let's see what Brad and Desi have for us.
It's Tuesday, December 14, 2021.
This is the deadliest tornado event we have ever had.
Unprecedented December tornado swarm plows path of destruction in Midwest.
This is going to be an historic tornado outbreak, one of the worst we have seen in the nation's history.
And yes, man-made global warming is increasing the risk of major tornado outbreaks. Plus,
the future of transportation in our nation and around the world is electric.
Biden administration unveils strategy for national network of EV charging stations.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
So people here will say they have great compassion and they want to help the people of Puerto Rico and the people of Texas and the people of Florida. But notice they have great compassion with someone else's money.
Oh, that must be Kentucky Senator Rand Paul from 2017. He should meet Kentucky Senator Rand Paul from 2021, who's now asking for federal aid with other people's money for Kentucky. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, Rand Paul has voted time and time and time against federal disaster aid for all sorts of states around the country. Now that it's his state that's under the gun, now he's asking for federal aid.
Yes.
Go figure.
Socialism for me, but not for thee. Officials are struggling to restore water, power, and heat to tens of thousands of residents amid freezing temperatures after more than 50 tornadoes plowed a path of destruction across at least six states in an unprecedented December outbreak over the weekend. As we go to air, the outbreak killed nearly 100 people, a toll that is expected to rise, and destroyed or damaged thousands of homes from Arkansas to Illinois just weeks before Christmas. The strongest tornado could have been on the ground for 250 miles, which, if confirmed, would be a record. In Illinois, a tornado demolished an Amazon warehouse, killing at least six, but Kentucky was by far the hardest hit. Kentucky's Democratic Governor Andy Beshear choked up in announcing the devastating loss of life, with more than 70 killed.
The age range is 5 months to 86 years, and six are younger than 18.
President Biden has signed emergency declarations for Kentucky, freeing up federal resources.
Whatever they need, when they need it.
And he will head to Kentucky on Wednesday. In Illinois, Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker suggested that building codes for facilities such as that Amazon warehouse that was partly destroyed may need to be adjusted as global warming exacerbates extreme weather disasters.
So it makes us wonder, I have to say, about whether or not we need to change code based upon the climate change that we're seeing all around us.
Yeah, if you're going to get tornadoes in December, I think there's a lot of stuff you're going to have to change, Governor.
And yes, human-caused climate change is a factor. Climate scientists say that while it's unclear if climate change is affecting the frequency of tornadoes, it is boosting and intensifying the conditions that fuel such outbreaks as humanity warms the planet with carbon pollution. Scientists confirm that Tornado Alley is shifting farther east, away from the Kansas-Oklahoma area and more into the southeast where this system hit. December tornadoes do occasionally occur, but not like this historic outbreak, which was fueled by unusually hot temperatures in the southeast that were more like spring than winter. In fact, Memphis hit a record high of 80 degrees on the day the storm hit.
I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri. We had a lot of tornadoes.
Well, oh, for pity's sakes. I don't know why it cut out like that, but oh well. So there's the there's some portion of the Green News Report for this evening. And I've got thank yous to send out. Christopher jumped in and answered Ralph's challenge. So thank you very kindly to Charlene in Rogues Island. We are down to $60 to go on Rico's Fuck Joe Manchin, the continuing Fuck Joe Manchin challenge that will get us down to being fully funded through Wednesday of last week. Thank you. Thank you both so much. We've got $60 to go, and hopefully we can get that taken care of. Let's Let's run over to the phones and check in with Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. And
what's
you?
What's happening? Oh, okay. I'm sitting here in my car in the rain waiting for the children to come out of the school and applying for a grant for black women small business owners.
Oh, excellent, wonderful. Well, hopefully that'll work out in your favor. And in the meantime, you know, it's raining in Southern California. You need it.
Yeah, and that song, you know, by Tony, it never rains in Southern California. They lie.
Yeah, they lie.
They lie. But it's, you know what? It's considering how hard it was raining this morning, I managed to, you know, get down the 405 and to pick up my kids without any incidents. I wasn't even late picking anybody up this morning, shockingly. Because on the other freeways that I was listening to the traffic report, yeah, there were fatalities. Whole parts of the freeways closed because of flooding. Because you know we don't know how to drive in LA. Period. But when it rains, it's really bad, really bad. So yeah, it's really. But it, like I said, I left early just in case. Because it was just bad. It was some traffic, but it wasn't that bad. So, you know me, so how's everything going with you, baby? I mean, I know tomorrow is your, hopefully one of your last appointments until next year. How are you feeling about that?
I'm all excited. The appointment is fairly early in the day, so hopefully it won't mess with the program. And I just, want to go in, get a couple of questions answered and have him say, yeah, I hit the road. That's the big deal. And then I won't.
And how are you feeling?
And then I won't.
Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And then I won't, have to be back down here till like, you know, early February and then like early May.
Awesome. So I had a wonderful day yesterday. I got to spend time with our buddy Chris from Oregon. He was down visiting, Rick and yesterday he met me in Camarillo. Fortunately, it wasn't raining yesterday. And we went to the Cracker Barrel for breakfast. And we also went to the outlets because my day was busy. I planned on driving into LA to see him. But I realized that would be just too much. And so I said, you know, how do you feel about driving to Camarillo? And he's like, hell, I'm on vacation. I don't care. I'm like, perfect answer. So he met me up in, like I said, Camarillo. We went to breakfast at the Cracker Barrel. And then we, because I had some stuff I had to return to the Camarillo outlet. So I returned those things and we got a couple of gifts for his nieces or nephews, and then he was like, he wanted to hang out some more, but of course, I had to get back to work because, you know, I'm not on vacation, and I pointed him in the direction.
That's next week,
and in a whole different state at that, and so, because I didn't realize he likes to gamble, so I pointed him in the direction of one of my other favorite casinos, Chumash, which is up in Santa Barbara County. So we, you know, it was like an hour north from where we were. So it was, you know, he said it was a nice drive and everything. So I was a little jealous because I really, really, really much rather have been playing poker than driving yesterday. I promise you that. You know, but whatever.
Yeah, but without a doubt.
He texted me this morning and said that I was hoping I would have time to, you know, hang out with him today, but because my crazy teacher keeps changing shit for this class that I've been fighting, yeah, no. So, you know, but I think him and Rick are getting together tomorrow evening. So, But I told him to go. So he's asking me what I should do, what he should do today. So I told him to go to the California Science Center, which is really, really cool. And on the same campus is the California African American Museum of Art.
Nice.
The only thing that, yeah, and so I don't know if he went, but the only thing that sucks is that the Natural History Museum wasn't open today either, you know. But at least he got, you know, two, you know, museums for, you know, pretty cool, I think.
I love it when members of the Horn Family Community Congregation get together.
Yeah, and I sent a picture of us smiling in front of my cab. And I hope he got to go to the museum. It's a really cool place because at that museum, the California Science Museum or Center or whatever, they have a space shuttle.
Wow.
On display. Now, the story behind that thing, it was this big publicity thing, Toyota, they had a Toyota Tacoma, you know, towing it from the airport, or from, I think that was the LAX to the museum, which is over by USC. But unfortunately, because of how wide it was or is, they had to cut down.
I remember that.
Old trees these trees that had been, you know, on Sepulveda Boulevard for years. I mean, old growth. I mean, beautiful shade trees. They cut those trees down. They tied up traffic for hours. I mean, it was just a publicity stunt to me because I can't imagine they couldn't have took the bitch apart and then put it back together at the museum. You know what I'm saying?
I do indeed.
I mean, I can't imagine because I'm pretty sure. I really don't remember if they flew it here. I forget how it got to LA initially. But again, to cut, and when they cut down those trees, Robin, they didn't get the community's input.
Of course not.
They just did that shit. I'm like, you motherfuckers. And like I said, because they could only go like, you know, maybe 10 miles an hour going through the streets of Los Angeles. So I don't remember how long it took, but it tied up traffic for hours. Fortunately, I don't think I was working at the airport that day, so it didn't affect me, but still. I may have not worked that day purposely, so I wouldn't get caught in that mess, you know? So that part. So yeah, I'm almost done with school. I have one final due on Thursday, another final due on Sunday, that bullshit paper on Friday, and another something on Friday, and I'm done.
That's all. And then how much more to go before the degree?
4 units.
Pshaw. You got that.
Yeah, but I'm taking 12 units because, you know, financial aid. So
right, you still got to carry the load.
I still got to carry the load. So I'm like, okay, it is what it is. So yeah, you know, the next semester is going to be, you know, completely chilled and nothing like this, the hell. I don't know what it is about me and fall semesters anyway. I always seem to have trouble in the fall. I don't know.
Probably, I don't know, maybe it's got something to do with circadian rhythms, the change in the...
Yeah. Exactly. It's just so much. It's just, anyway. So yeah, I mean, I don't have much to say. I'm just, you know, I've been laughing at the goings on in, the people panicking in, DC about who's, you know, getting names are going to be named and, I'm just sitting back with my, you know, with my popcorn and my juju beads waiting to see what's going to happen.
I'm a junior mints kind of girl, but never mind.
Yeah, I don't, yeah. Okay, if I say something that I don't like junior mints, then we'll go into a whole thing mm-hmm. about, you know, yes. I'm a junior mintacist and, you know, juju bead supremacist, you know. It's just, I'm not a big fan.
You're trying to preempt that shit, aren't you?
Yes, and because I was about to say it, and I'm like, wait a minute, because I can hear the jokes now. You know, you guys got me for mayonnaise, you got me with the raisins. So now what? And it's like, can I not?
Jujubes.
You see, it's more so really. It's really mostly red vines because it's hard to find jujubes now, but definitely red vines.
Yeah, see, that's another one.
But you don't like red vines?
No, I'm not into, no. I'm really not into the chewy stuff.
I shouldn't be because of the sorry state of my teeth, but, you know.
No, I'm,
But I'm like.
I used to really like Jordan almonds.
Mmm. Jordan almonds. Oh yeah, I remember those.
They were kind of pastel colored.
Mm-hmm.
I remember those. Yeah, they come in. I mean, I think there's yellow and green in there too, but they come in transplant colors, you know, pink, blue, and white.
Nice.
Oh, and by the way, I just got a note from Billable Rick. It says Tracy and Chris from Portland, Chi-Town. Please say hi to Tracy for me. Sounds like she and Christopher from Portland, Chicago, had a good time yesterday, as we did on Sunday. Chris and I enjoyed the first half of the Bears-Packers game until Aaron Rodgers asserted his ownership interest in the Bears. Chris enjoyed a fantastic spaghetti dinner at Shea Star, and Bella the Shepherd really loves Chris and gave him beaucoup puppy kisses. Next up is karaoke with Chris tomorrow night after my 9-ball game at the Rattler, a.k.a. the Rat's Nest, ends. Have fun on your vacation next week, Tracy, says Billable Rick.
Oh, thank you.
Well, you started it. You did it again.
What did I do now?
I'm hearing from Randy Radar. It's the raisinettes that are vile. Oh, heresy. Raisinettes and junior mints are right there neck and neck for me. I love them both.
Why fuck up chocolate with some goddamn raisins?
Because they're delicious. And Ralph says into the Twizzlers Twist strawberry licorice candy zipper bag. Yeah, the red Twizzlers.
I think the red Twizzlers are an abomination personally. But that's just me.
Wait, are you saying you're the Grand Twizzler?
You can't help yourself, can you?
No, I really can't. It's like a tick. It's like a tick.
It's just, you just, yeah. It's like I said, it's pathological.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's probably some pharmaceutical medications being advertised tomorrow on Morning Joe that might help my filthy habit.
Exactly. That part. But, you know.
But they make, dark, I'm so excited they, make, about- they make dark chocolate raisinettes now, and I really love them. You see, I'm not a grape supremacist.
Yes.
Or a raisinist.
You know, hold on.
Uh-oh. In the meantime, I need to send out some thank yous. Thank you so much to Nina. Thank you, Nina. We are now down to $40 to go on on Rico's challenge. That's remember, that's not double your money. That's triple your money. There's $40 more in the in the chance to triple your money and help us get last Wednesday funded, and then we'll start on Thursday. If we meet this challenge, we'll actually be $10 into last Thursday. So that's awesome. So thank you so much, Nina. Nina with a message. Merry Christmas, Robin. Thank you. Thank you, Nina. And the happiest of holidays to you too. Oh, by the way, Tracy, just in terms of, you know, there's so much paperwork that goes with what I've been going through. Are you there?
I can only imagine. Yeah, I'm here.
There's a law firm down here that, just as a service to the community, takes care of people's, oh my God, you just about have to have an encyclical from the Pope to get your birth certificate changed. But, I'm going to start that process before we leave. And so that'll be like 6 months down the road, but my birth certificate will be right. And that's, you know, one more box to check off.
Awesome.
So I'm excited.
Most definitely awesome.
That was
the good news is it stopped raining here.
Is that really good news though? I mean, couldn't it rain for like 40 days and 40 nights and y'all still be in drought?
Yeah, but it's good news in the respect that I don't have to drive home in the rain.
Well, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
That's what I mean. I mean, we do need rain. And once I get home, I don't care if it rains, start raining, you know, but we do desperately need the rain. But for now, it'll be nice to, especially since I got to drive over Coldwater Canyon and all that, it'll be nice to, you know, drive. Not that, you know, it's bad enough to have to deal with traffic, but not to have to deal with traffic and rain. That part.
What is it about the Coldwater Canyon that makes me think that there's like some sort of rustler's hideout up at the head of it?
It does sound like that, doesn't it? No, it's just, you know, it's just one of the canyon that you can cut through to get from the valley to the other side of the hill. So there's Laurel Canyon, Coldwater Canyon, Benedict Canyon, Beverly Glen, Sepulveda. So these are ways to avoid, you know, these are the things that people used to go through before they built the 405.
Ah, okay. Well, I have some good news. Kevin in Massachusetts just finished off Rico's challenge. That's fantastic. So now we can start on last Thursday. We got $290 to go on last Thursday. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you so very much. And thank you to Rico for the challenge. Thanks to everybody who jumped in on that. That was huge. And Matt in San Francisco, I want to watch a movie with you or something. Dig this subject line: Raisinettes. Throw Raisinettes on top of hot buttered movie popcorn. So good it should be illegal. Yes. Yes.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm doing that. I'm doing that because Annette likes Raisinettes too. Because we're a Raisinist family. We're anti Raisinist.
Yeah. You're anti Raisinist. Okay. You're teaching people how to be an anti Raisinist?
We've been to some seminars, we've been to some conferences, we've been to some teachings. You know, some anti-raisinist teachings. It starts with understanding that all raisins are equal,
matter,
and that you know every raisin begins the same way as a grape, and that white raisins are not better than brown raisins, and that every raisin has value and worth. Probably a little more value and worth now with the prices going up. You know, never mind. That's too much work.
Yeah, you were taking it to a whole nother level.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, like right now, there's a chance that my professors will be going on strike next semester, which might delay my semester.
Oh, really? Because that's just a little too snake bit for.
They're asking, they haven't had a raise in like, I don't know, 5, 6, maybe even 10 years.
Of course not.
And they're asking for, you know, horrors upon horrors, a 5% raise. Did I mention that the school just got this crazy, like millions and millions of dollars in endowments and stuff like that? But of course, and that the president of the school and the trustees and all that, they've gotten raises.
Oh, of course. And how many adjunct professors, you know, the ones
like what's happening to me, who's an adjunct professor?
Yeah, the adjunct professors who get paid like Walmart workers.
Right.
They're probably not.
And they either. No. In my department, out of this, I forget how many professors there are, but there's only maybe four, it's like three. There's not that many full-time professors. There's still, you know, there's associate professors, and then there's a couple that are up for promotion. They're on the tenure track and all this other stuff.
Yep.
I can never do that. I just, you know, had I finished school when I was younger, this is strong, I would have loved to have been a professor. But now?
Mm-mm. Well, I mean, there's no, the jobs aren't there because everything's mm-mm. getting dialed back and they want people to, they want young academics to work for damn near free. I mean.
For free. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, at the way, you know, there's a fetish for poverty, poverty wages among not just the corporate America, but, in academia too.
Right.
Oh, well, I wanted to ask you something though. Speaking of underpaid, are you keeping track of the list of products that are made by Kellogg's?
Should I be?
Yes.
Oh, because of the strike.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you know what? I haven't been eating anything. Besides, you know, because I know about the cereals and stuff like that. Is what else do they make?
Oh, Lord God.
Is it that bad? Oh, God.
You're probably not a big fan of Pringles, but Pringles.
Kellogg's makes Pringles?
Yep.
Well, like you said, I could go my whole life without eating another Pringle, so it's not this, you know.
Yeah, how do you feel about Cheez-Its?
Nope, don't care.
Oh, you're good so far. Morningstar Farms Incognito?
God, no.
Okay. So far, you're not... Pop-Tarts?
No.
You're not going to be...
No, this had to be one of...
You're not going to be able to do any economic damage to the Kroger's, to the Kellogg Corporation.
No, because I do have a thing about Kellogg cereal, you know, Fruit Loops, what else? Frosted Flakes, all those. Yeah. But I haven't been buying cereal lately because there's no reason. I've been eating Quaker Oats, granola, and you know, oatmeal.
Ah, granola, you say?
Quaker Oats granola.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Quaker Oats granola.
Because Kashi?
So,
Kashi? That's Kellogg's.
I've got that stuff. It's horrible.
Well, okay.
It's like eating, if I wanted to eat sawdust, I would go to a lumber mill and get the shit for free, the stuff for free.
You haven't tried to get sawdust lately, have you?
Yeah, well, I'm just,
I guess you're no threat to the bottom line for Kellogg's Raisin Bran.
No.
but no Rice Krispie treats for you.
Now, okay, you got me. But again, I haven't made them in a long time, so it's not like I will be devastated that I can't make Rice Krispie treats. Even though Rice Krispie treats with hot cocoa.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know. We used to love to make it when the kids were little, the variation on the Rice Krispie treat recipe that also includes peanut butter and chocolate chips.
Or raisins?
Don't start.
I'm just asking.
We'll have no grape supremacy on this program. But no, all kidding aside, the Kellogg strike is deadly serious, and the corporation is, of course, being complete assholes.
Oh yeah, isn't that usually the case?
And in fact, Kellogg's reached out. Kellogg's declared that they would hire scabs and permanently replace the 1,400 workers who have been on strike since October 5th.
Who do they think they are, Reagan?
Well, we have Republican policies to thank for the fact that they can hire scabs. But I don't know about anybody else, but I ain't going to eat no scab cereal. Sugar frosted scabs.
Because I kind of heard, the black radio station, top radio station, and the other night they were talking. I kind of heard, I didn't hear it completely, and I wanted to look it up, but you know, my brain, I got to start making notes for myself. But anyhow, they were going on and on. I guess they were offering them $35 an hour, and they were like, that's good money. And I'm like, and then they were saying, yeah, it's good money, but then they're forced to work extra hours with only 15 minutes notice. So what if you have kids and you need to get the babysitter and stuff like that, and just they get hardly any time off. It's horrible. And they're like, well, $35 an hour in Michigan, that's great, but at what cost?
Joe Biden has rung in. He has said he's, quote, deeply troubled by reports of Kellogg's plans to permanently replace striking workers. Permanently replacing striking workers is an existential attack on the union and its members' jobs and livelihoods. I've long opposed permanent striker replacements, and I strongly support legislation that would ban the practice, and such action undermines the critical role collective bargaining plays in providing workers a voice and the opportunity to improve their lives. While... and then the ad popped up. While contributing fully to their employer's success. Unions built the middle class of this country. My unyielding support for unions includes support for collective bargaining, and I will aggressively defend both.
Okay.
And so, by the way, they had a portal, Kellogg's did, inviting people to apply for their scab jobs. And it got hammered.
Oh, good.
You know, not by Kellogg's workers, but by people supporting the workers. You know, this is a terrible time if you're Kellogg's, and we know how hard it is to keep workers right now. This is kind of a terrible time to say that having just treated your workers like shit, you're going to get a new crop of workers to, wait a minute, treat like shit.
Right.
Yeah.
That part.
Not the sharpest
knife in the drawer, I tell you. I think about one of my, I've had a few jobs, but one of my first long-term job was when I was a cashier at Ralph's. And it was a union job. And USCW Local 770 wasn't that strong of a union, but we still got some damn good benefits. again, I didn't pay, I didn't have a copay when I went to the doctor. All my medicine, it was one price for no matter how many prescriptions I've got, if I even had to pay. I actually had real dental insurance. You know, I was, when I hurt my knee at work, I got not only workers' comp, but I got union benefits that subsidized. I was making more sitting at home than I was working. Because what had happened was, the day I found I was pregnant with Alex, I fell in a hole. My mom said I was trying to throw myself. I'm like, that's not nice. But I needed to have knee surgery. But I couldn't have it until after Alex was born. And so I worked until I, you know, I couldn't work anymore. And because, and then I had Alex and then I had surgery. Now, without, my regular maternity leave would have been, I think, 3 months. But because I had to have knee surgery, I was off of work for 11 months and it was all paid.
Yeah. Oh, hey, I got to, you know, I got to share this with you. I just got a couple of pictures from Christopher.
Okay.
Christopher said, amazing time in L.A. Much love out to Tracy for yesterday and Rick and Star and Bella for Sunday. And you know that same rainbow you sent me a picture of?
Uh-huh.
Christopher just sent it to me as well. And the rainbow is directly above the directly over the African-American Museum.
Wow. I wonder if it'll still be there when I get over, because I kind of go in that area. So I wonder if it'll still be there when I get over the hill.
I don't know if this was, I'm guessing this was yesterday, maybe. I don't know.
No, I know. The rainbow, today is when I sent him the info for the African American Museum.
Oh,
because
okay.
He would have been at the casino during the rainbow I sent you a picture of yesterday.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, they don't last very long, so.
No, I know. But yeah, just thinking of that rainbow, that was the first time in my entire life that I saw the whole rainbow. Because typically you only see, you know, one part of the rainbow, right? And I was like, what? The entire rainbow. And I mean, you can't see it, but you can see every color, the purple, because I've never really seen the purple before, the purple, the blue. Yeah, it was gorgeous, and it was huge.
Yeah, the V in Roy G. Biv.
Yes.
Red, orange, yellow, blue. Red, orange, yellow, blue. No, red, orange, yellow,
purple.
Green, blue, indigo, and violet.
Yeah, violet. Okay, yeah. You say violet, I say purple.
Well, I learned it as Roy G. Biv.
Got you. Yeah, it was a sight to behold, let me tell you. Okay, right now in LA, it is 49 degrees, y'all. And I know that's not cold for a lot of people, but for us, it's stupid. We don't do cold here.
Yeah. You probably got your Antarctic puffy coat on, right?
Rabbit.
Yeah. Shut up. Right.
What of it?
Well, I tell you what. I will let you get about your business, and I think.
Yeah, I'm about to go through because I'm going to. I'm probably. Are you going to get ready? Are you going to skedaddle?
I am, because I've sat about as much as I can sit.
Okay. Well, I am glad that we got to share this time together just to have a laugh and sing a song.
There we go. Now, tug your earlobe.
Tug your earlobe, you know. But anyway, oh my God, you should see the view. But anyway, I'm excited for you and your appointment tomorrow. I can't wait to hear about it.
Oh, I hope I get the news I want to get.
What time is the appointment, local time?
11:15.
So 9:15 my time. Okay.
And 12:15 Eastern.
So that's cool. So I'll be waiting to hear. And I'm excited for you. And I look forward to hearing, you know, we'll talk later.
Yeah, that's like
that's
said,
what we do.
We will be leaving here a week from today.
Is today, what's today's date?
14th.
The 14th, okay.
Yep.
Cool.
So,
that is awesome, sir.
Huge steps forward. And, we'll make that first little jaunt up the road and see how things go.
Now, when you said you're leaving there, are you guys going to Florence or are you going home?
We're going to Florence.
Okay. And then you're going to stay there for a while and then you're going to go home.
Right.
Okay.
By the way, Billable Rick says, harsh Southern California weather. 49 degrees in the valley for Tracy is warm. The temperature at tea time tomorrow morning at 7:10 is predicted to be like 39 degrees. I'll be wearing a stocking cap.
Well, that's your fault for going outside golf.
Ooh, there'll be frost. There'll be frost on the greens with that.
Yes, there will be.
Don't forget to bring your hockey stick putter there, and your hockey wedge.
No, I'm good. Getting cold.
Yeah.
But anyway, you take care. Give Agnes a hug for me, and we will talk soon.
All right, you take care. Have a safe trip going home.
So thank you, baby. Bye.
Bye now. No, that's the one and only Tracy. Wrapping up her busy day, and I'm going to wrap this one up as well because, I've gotten in a lot more program than I got in last night. Almost 2 hours. It just gets kind of painful after a while. But we'll get to the place where we're back to our regular 3 hours. And we've done it a few times. Brother Deacon Asa says, "Well, I'll be dipped if you ever again tell me it's too cold up here." In lovely Vancouver, it is partly sunny, partly cloudy, partly sunny, half empty, half full, and 41 degrees. A lovely 41 degrees at 4:51 p.m. And that's the other thing. We're getting closer and closer to the winter solstice. I love the winter solstice, the shortest day of the year, but the beginning of the lengthening of days. I'm very much attuned to the tiltings of this lovely little planet of ours. So thank you. Thank you, each and every one of you who responded to Rico's challenge. Thank you, Rico, for the challenge. That means that we're now working on Thursday, Friday, yesterday, and today, and tomorrow. And hopefully we'll get that all knocked out, I hope. And I also hope the program won't be, I hope there'll be a program tomorrow. There should be. There really should be. Unless the doctor's really, really stacked up and just can't get, wait times and whatnot. But thank you. And thanks to each and every one of you who, with your Patreon and PayPal subscriptions and your a la carte contributions, keep this little nearly two-decade experiment in independent broadcasting afloat. Thanks to everyone, all of you, who share your precious finite time engaging in this program in whatsoever manner you may choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky for a while in the chat room earlier. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. I messed up my time calculations. It's weird. This little laptop is still in Eastern time, and it's 3:51. Thank you, Randy Radar. 3:51 in Vancouver. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. This would be a good time to reach out to your member of the House of Representatives and ask them to please co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, the AHEC Act. It means the world to Appalachia. Please stay safe. By the way, Pfizer now says that its COVID pill is highly effective at preventing the worst parts of the Trump disease and, COVID-19. Now the question becomes who will be able to afford it? I read somewhere earlier today that there is enough vaccine now produced to vaccinate every person on Earth, but that wealthy nations are stockpiling it instead of busting their ass to get it into less developed, less economically wealthy countries, and thereby putting an end to this near 2 year long nightmare. Get your vaccine, get your booster, wash your hands, don't touch your face, standard disclaimer, use your hand sanitizer, take some with you everywhere I go. I've got a little bottle in my purse. Wear your mask, maintain your social distance, and if somebody comes towards you saying, well, I texted Mark Meadows because I didn't have my daddy's number to tell him to call off the insurrection. Wrong accent, I know. Still, avoid that person, avoid that traitor top like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.